Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his feet, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton. Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this game with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
It's the doink that's just about ruined episode 100. Those damn Chiefs find a way once more, taking down a valiant second half performance from our beloved Chargers to win their ninth straight AFC West title, this bout 1917. But a loss without Ladd McConkey, Denzel Perryman, and one of last week's unsung heroes, Tony Jefferson, playing away to the luckiest powerhouse in the league, won't piss on our parade tonight, fellas. We copped the loss with gritted teeth. So many would-be, could-be moments. All for us to break down on this, the Thunder Down Under Chargers podcast. Andy here with my boys, Jack and Alistair. And you heard right at the top, it's episode 100 for us, Aussie 3.
If only raise the bats.
If only the football gods cared about Australians watching American sports, perhaps that ball could have sailed an inch to the left and bounced back into the field of play. Alas, it didn't. Guys, congratulations. What a milestone.
Hey. I'm not going to miss my moment this time, Andy, because you know what? We're efficient. We're more efficient than the first half Chargers offense, that's for sure, because we actually reached triple figures. Yes, it was a bit of a game. Let me tell you a little story about how I didn't really enjoy this game that much. I was at school. I was able to watch most of the first half. I had to go to some sort of prize-giving assembly with about 7 minutes to go. And our dear friend Kyle, our wonderful Kyle D. Dominicantonio, decides to put into our group chat, only says, Justin Herbert's just done his ACL. That's it, boys. Good night. Or something like that, paraphrase. So I'm sitting there in this lovely prize-giving ceremony and looking at all the students, you know, get their things. My phone goes like, oh, I better have a look at that because I'm keeping track of the game. I see that and I completely lose my mind. I actually started to cry a little bit. I started to sweat. I started to freak out. I was freaking out and I had my head in my hands and I was almost rocking backwards and forwards.
Let me stop you there. Truth or fiction? Story or fact? Historical
absolute,
fiction or
absolute
literature?
Truth.
Was there some actual tears?
There was my hand shook and then I quickly checked X and then all these reports are saying Herbert's out of the game, he's gone, what's going on? And then I had my head in my hands and I reckon there was a small little tear that came out and someone came up to me and said, Mr. Reed, are you okay? And I went, no. And then they walked away. Yeah, that's how it was. So that's how I enjoyed the game. But then obviously he came back and everything was fine. But that's how I kind of experienced this game, Alistair.
Nice. Not quite so eventful for us. We had our standard watch at Andy's place. It could have been eventful had the Chargers won, because I recall we were going to do a nude podcast if we'd won. So thank the Lord that didn't occur. But where do I want to start the discussion, gents? I think I will start with Harbaugh's own words. Be at your best when your best is needed. Now, guys, I've quickly thought of seven points in this game where, not by our standards, by Harbaugh's standards, players or coaches were not at their best when their best was needed. And let me know if you disagree. First half, offensive line penalties, killing drives. Punting after the first drive instead of attempting a 57-yard field goal with Cameron Dicker, one of the best kickers in the league. Missing a connection to a wide-open Josh Palmer on a post route. Justin Herbert, who is a MVP-caliber quarterback, big miss. Misthrow to an open Josh Palmer on 1st and 5 near the red zone in the fourth quarter by Justin Herbert. Harbaugh and Greg Roman turtling up on 3rd and 16 at the Kansas City 24. Do you want to try and go for a touchdown or a nice throw? Herbert's been connecting with Palmer. No, we're going to just go with a 3-point lead and give Mahomes 4.5 minutes on the clock. Two more. Cameron Dicker penalized on the kickoff for not reaching the landing zone on the final drive. And Deion Henley missing Mahomes in the open field on 3rd and 7. So you play the best team in the NFL and you have 7 examples at least of you not being at your best in critical scenarios. It is no wonder that you don't come home with the goods. So I don't think you're going to beat the best team of our era if you're going to play like that. But I'll turn this into a question. Even having regard to that, do you guys feel like we have laid the groundwork with this performance for a future victory against the Kansas City Chiefs? Andy, maybe I'll let you answer that first.
Yeah, I think so. I think it's one of those matchups where it's always a close bout. There's always back and forth. You know, we saw in the first half, offense really couldn't get it going. Greg Roman was, for mine, doing a little boom or bust kind of operation where he's taken some nice shots down the field. He's got the flea flicker going. Running the ball wasn't really working, and you're kind of going, where's the in-between? Where's the no screens? There's no, if you look at how the Chiefs were sort of matriculating the ball down the field, it was, as Collinsworth said in the broadcast, it was dink and dunk, and there were no big-time throws from Mahomes, but they were still able to push the ball down the field. Now, credit to the defense, because they held him off and until that sort of that final drive or final Chiefs possession, we held them to 2 field goals. And then in the second half, the script completely flipped and Greg Roman was out coaching Steve Spagnuolo. And it was really frustrating to see that for a few reasons. But to answer your question, I always think that we're in with a shot against them. I think we just happen to play well against the Chiefs. We always bring close to a really strong effort against Kansas City because we know that they're good. We have to, division, all that kind of stuff. But I think as far as laying the groundwork for the future, do we have their number? Maybe not quite, but put all the pieces together and it's definitely achievable. And I think, you know, I think maybe last week about the Chiefs having the worst record as an 11-1 team with a 54-point differential. Well, it's now a 56-point differential and they've had 12 wins, right? So there's those 7 points absolutely apt. Might argue with one, but it would be real pithy. The big pass to Josh Palmer, you see Mike Pennell kind of get in the throwing lane. Al, we spoke about it when we were watching. He kind of had to change his angle of release. But
last minute.
Yeah. But other than that, there were just... He couldn't really decide on whether or not he wanted to be conservative or aggressive. Harbaugh, that is. Goes for it on 4th and 2, succeeds. And it's moments like that where you're like, why did we elect to run the ball on 3rd and 16 rather than take a shot? Because if it fails, unless it's a blatant interception, you're still kicking the field goal rather than just succumbing to... You know, we're in range, we'll just have it and, you know, we'll go up 1 point, 17-16 with 4.5 minutes to go.
Let me jump in here because I can hear what you're saying, Andy, as well. Yeah. But I always think of, it's kind of the you talk, Andy, of the script flipping at halftime. The actual matchups here are slowly flipping the script. Roman's offense is becoming boom or bust, as you said. These big, deep shots are actually allowing the Chargers to move down the field. When, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, we were very much used to seeing Mahomes and Tyreek Hill do that. Now they've completely changed. I think Mahomes is throwing his lowest A dot ever, and they are just this bare minimum offense that just moves the ball first down, first down, first down. And yes, they're not scoring the 30, 40 points they were that ago, those years ago, but they are winning. And I think of Thanos and I think of that statement, I am inevitable. And that is kind of how the Chiefs are playing. They've got that extremely strong interior line, which was on show, especially to the end of the game when Pacheco was running really, really hard. It was a strange game. But you know what, Alistair, to go back to your question, I think we were negative 0.47 EPA in the first half on early drives. That's just not going to get it done. It doesn't matter who you're playing. You're not going to win the game when you're losing almost half a point on first and second down. It just can't happen. And now that is now three games under 100 rushing yards, and that's consecutively. Something is not right in this running game.
Yeah. The facts are we've played the Chiefs twice this year, lost one game 17-10, and then this one 19-17. You keep the Chiefs to below 20 points twice in the 1 year, man, Jesse Minter's doing everything he possibly can. And Andy, I agree with you. Greg Roman, he's now just starting to rack up too many black marks against his own name. There are things that I'm not liking. We continue to target Quentin Johnston on deep patterns repeatedly. While you've got guys like Josh Palmer and DJ Chark, they're kind of three wasted snaps. I know one drew a DPI, but it's just not his game, especially when it's Trent McDuffie covering him. So yeah, they're wasted, missed opportunities. I already called to you, Andy. I think there's not a lot of thought behind some of the schematics. I'll quickly go to you in a sec, Jack, because you've watched the tape just recently today. But I've always heard quarterbacks say they don't love turning their back to the defense on play action. They want to absorb information, see the defense. You can imagine Ben Roethlisberger flat out used to refuse to do it. Rivers is always a bit weird. Why would you want to hand the ball off and turn your back to the defense more than you have to? And I thought there were, like, don't get me wrong, it has its benefits, but there were times where we had under center play action, Herbert turning his back to the defense on an obvious passing down, like 3rd and 9. You're not fooling anybody, man. You're not fooling the defense. All you're doing is making it harder for Herbert. He's having to turn around and suddenly he's got a defensive end in his face. There are a couple of things, Jack. Did you want to build on any of that?
Well, I mean, I did watch the tape, the coach's film today. I wasn't necessarily looking specifically at the passing game. I really did focus on what the offensive line was doing. And here's my two cents. And I do truly believe that this running offense, and people might disagree with me, is so close to actually being quite good. It's so close. The execution errors that are happening, and you don't see those in the broadcast unless you watch them again. There are a couple of times where there are missed blocks by wide receivers. There are a couple of times when you've got the interior of the offensive line. They're missing a block by half a foot. And it's just those small execution errors that I think has plagued Roman and this offense throughout the entire year. And I just feel that if they just came together, not one snap good, two bad, but actually start to putting them in a row, that this passing game changes a little bit. I'm not a Greg Roman apologist, but I thought after looking at it today that it was there. The holes were there. The gaps were there. It's just the execution that's lacking.
Can I keep you in the spotlight building on something Andy said? I think a couple of weeks ago now, I made the observation that, look, Herbert's average depth of target is as high as it's been, but perhaps it's too predictable. It's we're looking at chunk plays. We don't have an element of quick game in this offense. It's too much feast or famine, and they're low percentage things to complete, Andy, yeah, as you were saying during the broadcast. Now with a couple more games, do you think that the offense lacks that rhythm, dare I say it? Like the Chiefs, 5 minutes before the half, went into hurry-up mode. And that's how they got going and scored that touchdown drive. And Andy Reid referred to it on the broadcast. How are you feeling about that now?
We have no short game whatsoever. Roman refuses, and I said on last week's podcast, refuses to dump it off to the running back. He's always been in the bottom two in the league, even when he had that famous offense in Baltimore. And if I go back to a talent standpoint, I just don't think we've got, other than Ladd McConkie, who can wiggle anywhere, we just don't have the cattle in the tight end room and the wide receiver room to get those short 6 yard, 7 yard completions. They're just too slow. They just don't create separation. Is Roman doing enough to actually work them open? Perhaps not. But this offense is, I'll say it again, like I said in my teachable moment last week, it's too focused on these one or two players, Herbert being one of them, Ladd McConkie being the other, J.K. Dobbins being another one, to actually, I think, be any massive danger in the playoffs.
Al, do you think Coach Harbaugh had a word to Greg Roman about how he was sort of stylizing the offense in the first half? Because there was quite a dramatic shift from, you know, the opening two possessions. And the thing, I guess, that frustrated me the most about the game on a greater level is you look at those first two possessions, both scoring 14 points in those first two drives, but it's sustained possession of the football. That is how you operate an offense and protect the lead, right? Where do you sort of think that that kind of evolved from, the idea behind Roman's change in kind of adjustments in philosophy?
I think Harbaugh has his fingerprints over everything that happens. I mean, I only got part of his press conference today, but Harbaugh took responsibility for running the ball on third and 16. Well, now, who knows if he's just taking that as the figurehead? Maybe. I would find it difficult to believe that Greg Roman's not doing anything that isn't executing Jim Harbaugh's vision. I think we've got the feeling now Jim Harbaugh does like to be conservative earlier in games. Let's punt it instead of going for a 57-yarder in case he misses and we give the Chiefs the short field. But I actually thought the way this game went, without having watched the All-22 this week, I thought Roman emptied out a bit more of a bag of tricks in the first half. I thought we were looking at flea flickers. There were a couple of attempted screens. One, remember, it was ineligible man downfield. That was an attempted screen to Disley. There was some involvement of Darius Davis. DJ Chark got on the field in the slot. I thought it was the second half where they went a bit more old school and said, let's run the ball behind the left side of our offensive line. Rashawn Slater, Zion. Let's get Tucker Fisk out there and let's not talk about the other fullback. And I don't care if the Chiefs know we're going to run it there. We're going to run that way and it's going to work. And it started to work. And then the play action started to work, as Collinsworth mentioned on the broadcast. So maybe, Jack, is that a lesson for the next few weeks heading into playoffs about be true to what you wanted to be at the start of the year, harbor bully ball, not this, you know, we've got Herbert, we need a pass to win at a, you know, league high clip. God, I'm sounding conservative.
Well, you've got to take into consideration what was happening on the first two drives. They were trying to run the ball and Chris Jones and the KC defensive line was just having their way. They were absolutely popping off. They knew exactly what was coming.
Give us a noise for episode 100. What was he doing?
Straight through. So, you know, and he had to go into that bag of tricks, you know. Second half, maybe they're a little more tired. Then you can perhaps go back to it. So, listen, I didn't mind Greg Roman pulling his bag of tricks out and doing some different things because it eventually moved the ball a little bit. And the second half, was executed. And again, I put it back down to it's just executing better. And I can't put it down to anything other than that small little
thing. Who specifically, Jack, when you're thinking execution, based on what you watch, who are standing out as culprits?
Culprits? So first half, there were some major errors from Trey Pipkins and Bradley Bozeman and Zion Johnson to a point. The passing game was not working. The pocket was collapsing. Even Joe Alt had a couple of reps where he was really struggling. When it came to the second half, you saw more competency from Zion Johnson, especially in that the Gus Bradley touchdown drive. Gus Bradley. Jeez, that's harking it back. Gus the Bus, the touchdown drive. And you also saw some better execution from the wide receivers just running routes. I thought they were able to create a little bit more separation. So on wide receivers, Andy, I'm going to ask you this question. Is this the QJ redemption game? Because you know what? Let me put it to you this way. Could he have done anything else more to be like, actually, this guy's okay?
If that's the catch that he's going to hold over the middle, that first one, where he gets absolutely lit up by Nick Bolton, then I can't make any sense of all the drops, right? It's just, he's an absolute enigma. He was, you know, we talk about bag of tricks and then kind of the less is more approach in the second half. He was used a little bit more to his sort of skill set, shorter yards after catch, that sort of stuff. Less so vertical on Trent McDuffie, the best Chiefs secondary player. Unfortunately, had a nice catch down the right, the far sideline that was negated by a penalty in the third quarter, I want to say. It was better. It's once bitten, twice shy, right? I'm not quite going to come back and say, oh, yeah, you know, he's phenomenal. Is he racking up? Yeah, you know, 10 catches on 12 targets for 130 yards and two TDs. Now, he ain't doing that kind of gear, but it was
He's bitten you more than once, mate.
Yeah, how long we
Bitten
got?
All of us.
Yeah, so it was good. It was good to see him make that catch, getting the ball in his hands early, although probably not how I would have sort of scripted a nice, easy confidence booster, but
not at all.
Look, after the last quarter month or so, it was good to see that he was reliable to an extent, and it was positive, especially with, you know, Ladd McConkey. I thought there were definitely guys that stepped up. Thanks for opening the door onto that QJ thing, because definitely worth talking about. It was an awesome catch, crazy throw to him, and thanks for the extra 15 on top.
Mm. Building on that, Josh Palmer's best game for the year, I thought. And to make it into a question, I mean, I think I said last week, jack of all trades, master of none. I still generally feel that way, but he had a very strong performance. It could have been better, as we mentioned earlier, had there not been a couple of miscues. Interestingly, he played 72% of his snaps in the slot most of the season. The next most he's had was 47%. So a massive differential. Obviously, that's because Ladd McConkey is not there. I'll make that a question, Jack. When Ladd returns, do you just go business as usual, Ladd 75% in the slot, or do you mix and match a bit more because we got Palmer involved, the best he has all year this week?
Mix and match, I'd say. Try to keep it. If Roman has a bag of tricks, try not to, you know, show the defense what you're trying to do. Josh Palmer's always been a good route runner, nowhere near as crisp or as fast as Ladd McConkey or Keenan Allen. But Josh Palmer also has play strength that Ladd McConkey doesn't have. There were numerous times on the film where Palmer is outside and he just can't get separation on the corners. It's just not there. Same with QJ. So we are really missing that outside burner, I think, that can just off the line, you know, create chaos for the DB on him and also the high safeties. I mean, DJ Chark, just, you mentioned it, Elsa sort of popped up and then disappeared, you know, like a rock star shift.
Can I say I hated it? Can I just say I hated it? I mean,
what did you hate about it?
Well,
his catch or the fact that he...
Well, I hate that he had a catch early in the game and then he was not on the field. So he played 15 snaps. Jalen Reagor played 19. But Chark only started playing snaps late in the game when Reagor came out hurt. So it was still this stubborn refusal, I think, to do something a bit different. If you're going to throw the ball deep, throw it to the guy you brought in to do it. Something is off. I'm not sure what it is, because when they got him in early, he had that 9-yard catch or 8-yard catch, took it an extra yard short of the marker. So, I mean, I don't know if Rager's going to miss time now, but maybe we'll see more of a DJ Chark appearance in the last four games of the year. Anything else on the offense, guys? Otherwise, we can move over to the defensive side of the ball. No.
I just quickly want to touch on what Jack was saying about Josh Palmer. There were a couple of times, quite noticeably, that he had Trent McDuffie in all sorts, like tripping over, facing the ground kind of thing. So, I do tend to agree with that kind of maybe wide receiver two at best ceiling for Josh Palmer, but he definitely has a couple of markers in each little category: play strength, catch, route running. Not, you know, a specialist in any way, but I tend to kind of agree on the front of the mix and match approach to, you know, working McConkey back in, depending on how hard out that injury is, or those injuries with the shoulder and the knee. But Palmer definitely showed that he can play in the slot as well. So, defense, take it away, Al.
Where do we start? Where do we start on the defense? You'd have to start on the job the team did, I think, pressuring Mahomes. Almost 42% of his dropbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty impressive. Did you like the mix, Jack, of that kind of line between not over-pursuing and losing your rush contain, but also keeping pressure? Did you like it?
I like it a lot. Best I've seen. I think every time we play the Chiefs or especially I always bring up, hey, you know, contain, keep the pocket, don't let him scramble, apart from the very late one when he did scramble and essentially won the game for them. But
that's when he does it. That's when he does it.
So good. I know. He's unbelievable. But I thought Mac was impressive. I thought Tooley was really good. I thought the interior defensive line was pretty good as well. You know, that is the best interior offensive line in the league by a margin. They are big. They are punishing. But I have to shout out because he just kept popping off on tape. The green dot man, the guy that didn't play at all last year, Diane Henley, I thought was on both sides. He was my player of the game. He just kept on popping up defensively, tackling. I shared a TDU film that he goes up against Creed Humphrey. Creed Humphrey's getting to the second level, best center in the game, mind you. Diane Henley, second year player, shoop, Pacheco, tackle, only a 3-yard gain. Incredible. Diane Henley could be one of the best linebackers in the league in the next sort of 24 months. That's how incredible I think he's playing. Andy, do you have any sort of insight or anything that you wanted to bring up for the defense?
Look, I felt like it was a bit of, not to just jump straight on the negative, but I think it was a little bit of kind of coming back to earth, returning for Cam Hart. Had a couple of good plays, but missed out a little. Bits and pieces, Taheeb as well. Can we just please get the secondary healthy so Jasir Taylor doesn't have to play on the field anymore? Like, I've had a gutful. I've had an absolute...
You've been waiting a couple of weeks.
Oh, get him off special teams too. What happened? I keep saying this. What happened to that Jasir that, you know, forced the fumble against the Broncos on the punt return? He's now just completely overshooting the kick catcher. It's just
that missed tackle on Samaje Perine when huge. He was the second man. Oh dear.
What are you doing?
Fresh airy.
Again, I think. But Khalil Mack, great again. Bosa, I thought Bosa had some moments, but then there were the technical aspect of things. And look, the first one, Juwan Taylor was false started, flat out, and he did it a bit. And for what went uncalled, and I don't want to make this about, you know, the Chiefs are so lucky because of the refs, but there were, especially on that final drive of the game, countless holding penalties, blocks in the back, tripping, all this stuff that just went completely uncalled. And maybe that's the way that they'll call the games in the playoffs where they don't like to throw flags, but...
And the Chiefs are on offense, they will.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. In the game where... Well, they're throwing it on defense, that's for sure. In a game where we actually won the penalty battle, if you will, it could have been a whole lot worse, and there were some moments that were incredibly damaging. But the pressure for my aforementioned, you know, holding issues from that offensive line or from the tackles in particular, was very impressive for how it could have been. What they were fighting against, really. Yeah, look, it's always those ones. It's always the noticeable ones. Like, Henley had a great game. One foul swoop, one miss. Cam Hart, I think, on a outside corner blitz, had a moment of flag football brain fade where he's actually got his hand up calling for the
lifeguard. We've got to talk about this.
We've got to talk about this.
Right? This is a wonderful Jesse Minter delayed blitz. I'd say I was trying to think, where did Cam Hart go wrong? Because I thought he had some good plays. Obviously, the one where he gets the ball out of Hopkins' hands, was it? Very late. But you're right. He gets sent on a delayed outside corner blitz on a 1st and 10. And he's through unblocked. And he can kill Mahomes. And then it's almost like he felt the aura of Mahomes and just stopped in front of him and starts waving his hand in the air like it's touch football. He could have ended his life.
Yeah,
something weird happened there. He clearly is not a guy who's done it a lot before, because you don't get an unabated into the quarterback chance to just lay out someone like that very often. And it's almost like he didn't know what to do. He's gone, oh, sorry, Mr. Mahomes, here, put my hand up.
Excuse me, sir, can you please just, you know, incomplete? Thank you.
Well, I mean, arguably...
It's rigged! The NFL's rigged!
He made up for it, because that hit on DeAndre Hopkins was... You're not going to see a better timed hit on a receiver to absolutely nail him. Perfectly legal, too.
The guy's got 5XL hands. How do you not catch that?
Quick, Andy, you asked the question, but on that play, Jasir Taylor also is in the area. Nah, and I said, I reckon he got his hand in. Andy's like, no, he didn't do anything. It's all hard.
Alistair,
and on the replay, I was right.
Where do you sit with like Marcus May's game, the safeties as well? Because like Elijah Molden looked okay. There was no, there were no major plays, and Marcus May comes in and per PFF ranks as our fourth best defensive player behind, you know, Derwin James. So Ortiz just keeps finding these guys and they keep doing okay. Christian Fulton played all right as well, other than that little grab that he was very lucky not to go to the house on. But
Aloha Gilman's come out and the team has not missed a beat defensively. No coverage breakdowns, arguably some better tackling. I don't know if Gilman's had the best year. I think his intentions are great. Sorry, Kyle, I know he came on your show not allowed to say anything negative about the Hawaiian sensation, but Marcus May is playing exemplary football. I love Elijah Molden, man. He's going to set a record for most interceptions wiped off by penalties by the time this season's done. That was his fourth. Now, I think we were saying that Mahomes knew, recognized it was a free play. So you don't want to cry foul on that one. But
I think Henley got a pressure on him anyway and sort of forced that throw into the air.
He did. So, he perfectly.
Look, much of a muchness. Bosa was offside.
So safeties are going very well. Jack, earlier you mentioned Dayon Henley. I'm glad you did, because I also think the guy next to him, Troy Dye, is playing some pretty unbelievable football for the last two games in Perryman's absence. And I ask you, Junior Colson came back into the team this week. Colson played 13 snaps. Dye played 33. When Denzel Perryman returns, what... Your coach Harbaugh, what are you doing, man? Is this like, sorry, Junior, it's a learning year for you, bud? Or are you playing your third round pick and Troy Dye, the random free agent, goes off?
The way Junior Colson has looked, not that I've watched him closely, but when he's on the field, it's not great. And if you've got your top three and if Troy Dye's your backup to come in, and remember, you've got Neiman sitting there as well. So clearly Colson's beaten out Neiman because Neiman's not getting, you know, he's healthy, he's not playing. But you kind of wonder if the game's just, and remember, let's give Junior Colson the benefit of the doubt like we did Dayon Henley. This time last year, we were going, oh, Dayon Henley, oh, he's obviously injured, we know that. But is he going to get up to speed? I trust with Minter's guidance and Harbaugh's coaching, Colson knows the system. I'm not too concerned as of yet. It's just wonderful to keep finding these guys like Dye, May, Molden that we can just plug in and they're ready to go. So that's a credit to Minter's system as well, because it must be veteran friendly. It has to be veteran friendly in the way that it runs, because people can come in and know exactly pretty much what they need to do. So I'd like to see a little bit more out of Colson, but I don't know if we're going to with those three strong backers playing.
Yeah, coming into the business end of the season, he's got the positive of having played in Minter's system before, which is great, but just sort of get that feeling that it's the game's a little too fast. He's had a pretty stunted build into his professional career. You got the veteran Troy Dye playing, who's performing admirably on defense. So, you know, if Colson's healthy, no reason why Dye plays less special teams. Colson can sit next to Neiman. It did wonders for Dayon Henley, because, you know, he barely saw a defensive snap, had a couple of injuries himself last year, and look how he's blossomed this year. So no reason why at the pointy end of the season that we need to force Junior Colson out on the field.
I also think when your eyes are a bit slow, you have some bad reps out there. And there was one where Creed Humphreys pushed him 6 or 7, 8 yards off the ball. And I think that's because you're seeing it late. And you're not taking an angle that allows you to get out of the way. And once Creed Humphrey engages you, Jack, it's fucking all over.
Yep.
Andy, Derwin's game, before we move on to our awards just quickly, how did you feel about him?
Love it. I think he's really coming into form. We've seen that over the last couple of weeks. Great sack. Great awareness. He's really switched on, clued in, and playing his role. So really, really liked it. It's good.
Nice. Per Daniel Popper, Travis Kelce ran 10 routes against man coverage last night. Did not have a catch on any of them. Derwin is in coverage on all 10 routes.
Exceptional.
Yep.
Exceptional.
I think Derwin was quoted as... it might have been someone else putting words in his mouth, but something along the lines of Kelsey's washed and I can't wait. Better have that health insurance. I'm absolutely filling it in now, but better have that health insurance ready because you thought that spinebuster powerbomb was something. When Doohan goes to KC, he wants to hurt. That's actually one thing, the comparison, you know, three sacks each. I feel like there's, and it's, I don't want to be propagating dirty play or anything like that, but there's moments where you get to the quarterback, like when Chris Jones or Sean Wharton, you know, sacked Herbert and he's actually like slung him down. There were moments where you can actually just bury Mahomes and you got to take those moments. If you're not being in position, put in a position to score points on defense, you got to hurt that guy. Like, it's a physical sport. Do it.
Or
like,
Joey Bosa did on his. He swung him around.
And maybe that's why I'm, you know, thinking, hey, because I just saw that, like, that, for use of a better word, that ginger in him to just bury Mahomes. And I wanted to see that a little bit more. Perhaps it was Minter's discretion to say, hey, you know, Cam Hart, let's not do what we allowed Mahomes to do last week when, you know, and he got Bud Dupree on a pump fake to scramble. Maybe Cam Hart had that in the, he's playing more of a mental than physical sort of approach to keeping Mahomes in and corralled him rather than going for that hit. But yeah, there were just moments where we really could have done a little bit more damage than just three sacks. Like, could have been miss a couple of plays. Get that checked out. Hop in the blue tent. That's where I'll leave it. Do we get into some awards, hey mate? Or we got anything else, Jackie boy?
Oh no, let's get into them. But are we just going to gloss over Dicker's mistake? Is that the kind of thing? I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you talk Alistair about all these.
Well, you're
mistakes
not stealing Andy's snake now. The week after Andy stole mine, I don't know where he's going to go. But he looks like he's almost just done something in his pants. He's looking a bit uncomfortable over there.
All right, so I'll leave it there. But let's just the other thing that I did want to highlight: special teams, and we can move on. Andy goes with here, snakes and ladders. Is that Darius Davis had 106 yards in his return game. Sneaky becoming, other than the two fumbles where he looked a very sort of nervous, actually that hidden yardage is there. Special teams is solid. So
yep. All right, snakes and ladders. I'll kick it off with down the snake, and 2 weeks in a row you wouldn't read about it. Who would have thought we were three best mates? There's a few things from this game where there was some bad, and then kind of guys redeemed himself. Darius Davis is one of them. Had a muffed catch on a touchback. Sent a bit of a spook into me. And then he muffed a kick, recovered it. And then he had a 37-yard return and kind of all was forgotten. And we got that hidden yardage that you speak about, Jack. On hidden yardage as well, where the first half things are working at maybe 30% of the time, 0 points on the board. Zion gets the holding call in the first quarter as Vidal runs for 7 yards. It gets negated, puts us back. Then you've got Joe Alt's holding call on the 3rd and 10. Would have flipped the field. QJ proved incredibly costly. You know, could have put us in a position to score more points. But we speak so highly of him. You're going for that line drive just to make it a little bit tougher for the Chiefs to return the ball. You kick it 6 yards in the air. It bounces barely over the half line. And look, maybe it's a 10-yard gain, but that hidden yardage is costly. And what it meant was that the Chiefs were able to, once again, matriculate the ball down the field, 4.5 minutes. I don't blame Harbaugh for his use of timeouts before the 2-minute warning, but defense had done just about all they could to, you know, keep the team afloat in this game. Maybe he was shitty that he wasn't put on the field for the early field goal attempts in the first quarter. But, yeah, Cam Dicker, mate, get that out of your system because that little squib kick down the snake, brother.
All right, two players up the ladder. I have to say, QJ, last week I said you're playing like my mum. Well, now at least you're playing like my dad. You did well out there, man. And I hope you build on that performance because you really play to your strengths. Geez, that was the least kind of authentic ladder I've done all year. And the other one goes to, really we've not talked. Yeah, we've not talked about him. Stone Smart. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah, mate. Highest graded player on the team. Double the snaps he's played in any game this season. 3 targets, 3 catches, 54 yards. Hey, and when you get compared to Isaiah Likely on the broadcast, you're definitely doing a couple of things all right. So well done, Stone Smart. But I'm not pulling out a song until you score me a touchdown. Jack, on to you. In our 100th show, what have you got for the teachable moment?
The teachable moment this week is brought to you by Oui Oui. In 1429, the French city of Orléans was under siege during the Hundred Years' War. The odds were stacked against the French forces, outnumbered and facing a daunting opponent in the English. Enter Joan of Arc, whose leadership, determination, and rallying of the troops turned the tide, breaking the siege and paving the way for future victories. The charge's narrow 1917 loss to the Chiefs mirrors this spirit of resilience and progress. Though the result didn't go their way, this is a positive one, mind you, the performances of players like QJ, Palmer, Henley showed that the Chargers are rallying to find new leaders and step up in the absence of key players like I discussed last week, like Ladd McConkey. Much like Orléans was a turning point for the French, this game highlighted the foundation of a team, and this goes back to the question, weirdly enough, that you asked at the very start of the episode, Alistair, capable of overcoming challenges. Justin Herbert's elite performance, pretty good, under pressure, recalls the unyielding courage of Joan of Arc. However, this story has a little bit of a sad turn because we all know that Joan of Arc was burnt at the stake. So I'm really hoping that this analogy that I've put together, and I'm just realizing now how doomed this actually does sound. So I'm going to end it there and go that, hey, Justin Herbert, Joan of Arc, you've turned the tide of battle. Good job. Let's take this and hopefully we win the war against the Chiefs if we see them in the playoffs. And please, Justin Herbert, don't get hurt. Just go down. Don't just, when I see you scrambling, just take a knee, please.
Oh,
please,
we haven't please, even please. Talked about that. We should have. Can we just say that was the ultimate piss take from Justin Herbert? Now, it must hurt to have a contusion or to have someone knock your knee like that. But the dude was lying on the ground for a full 3 minutes, clutching his knee, not moving. My goodness. I mean, I think every Chargers fan's heart sank when that happened. For him not to have even gone into the blue tent, mind-boggling to me, but it's just funny. I mean, I was saying to Andy, how are we going to do this show? We're going to have to do the rest of the season. We're not going to make the playoffs now. Little do we know, maybe Taylor Heineke would have become our leading rusher for the season. But...
Justin Herbert, just Justin Herbert, please, please, whenever he takes the ball and he's running and he's just... He makes one too many cuts, and that last cut that he does, he goes either back into someone and he's got two big guys behind him that are just going to crunch him. Dude, just take a knee, throw the ball away, do it again. Just learn from Mahomes. Mahomes goes, out he goes, fine. That's what you need to do. Just stop it, Justin. Stop it for your own sake.
Yeah. All right. Well, we would normally go into... the preview for week 15. Because it's show 100, we're going to buck the fucks and skip the preview this week. Al, I'm going to throw over to you for a bit of hashtag TDU mailbag.
All right, we got the hashtag TDU mailbag. Jack, find that soundbite by the next time we do it, please.
I need to find it.
Thanks to the listeners who submitted questions. You never disappoint. And I'll go through these a little bit quick fire. So let's start things off. I'm going to take the first one. Herbo season on X. How do you think this team will use LaVisca Chenault? I'm hoping they use him for sweeps and screens. Thanks and happy holidays. Thought we'd just mention quickly, boys, the team did sign LaVisca Chenault to the practice squad. Was playing with the Seahawks with Jim's brother, Jim's son, Jay. He is kind of a yak monster. Best spots in the slot. Another kind of luxury pick where you go, we'll take a guy who was a second round draft pick. But I thought it was interesting that Jim decided to sign the guy who muffed two punts, muffed two punt returns just the week before for the Seahawks. So Jim, showing that confidence, I can fix anything, including my son's mistakes. Love to see it. Thanks, Herbo season. But also, I don't know if I want to see LaVisca Chenault out there anytime too soon. Question for you, Jack. Buck Melanoma from Stormcloud asks, are the current offensive production issues more a problem of lack of talent or inability to adjust scheme to skill sets?
Or that's the question there's kind of the same. What do you try and do? Okay, from a coaching perspective, do you lower your standards or change your plays and your goal of what you want to do based on what you got in front of you? Or what do you do is you go, no, this is the way we're going to play. You will execute it. And if you don't execute it, we'll find someone who will. I think I'd like to think that we're going that way because this is the first year with Roman and Harbaugh. Because I do, when I watch the tape, and maybe it's just me, I do continually see skill execution errors. I think the plays are okay. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. So Jack says next year and the year after with more talent will come greater results. They better, because 20th in the league in points scored with Justin Herbert. Correct. Not going to cut it for too long. Yep. Andy, I know how much you hate this question, so I'll ask you. What positions would you prioritize in the draft? Maybe just quickfire. Did you, like, let's just say you had to rank a couple of the team's needs based on what you've seen. Maybe just two that are like staring you in the face that you think we need to target in the draft for sure.
I still think speed wide receiver is one. These are in no particular order. Speed, mm-hmm. wide receiver, tight end, and I'm looking at center and right guard.
Nice.
All offensive, I think. Look, things are going to change on the defensive side. Maybe DT, bit of an aging half of the linebacker room, but I'll leave it at that.
Yep. Trey Pipkins copping some strays. I love it. Okay, I'm going to go quick fire to the three of us. And just give me a snap reaction. Which of these players who are going to be free agents at the end of the year would you at least attempt to re-sign or start a conversation with their agent? Let's go around the horn. Jack, Khalil Mack.
Yes.
Andy, Morgan Fox.
No.
I've got Christian Fulton. Yes, I'd have a conversation. Jack, Denzel Perryman.
Yes.
Andy, Puna Ford.
Yes, certainly.
J.K. Dobbins for me. Yes, I'm going to have the conversation. Jack, Josh Palmer.
No.
Two more. Andy, Elijah Molden.
Yes.
And I'll take Tier Tart. Yeah, I like the guy. He fits the scheme. Good questions, Bucky. Thanks, mate. Moving along, Kev Diego. Good old friend, Kev. All right, boys, predictions for the remainder of the season. 4 games left. We've got the Bucks. We've got the Broncos, 4 days rest only, Thursday night football. Then it's at New England, at Las Vegas. So 4 games left. Jack, how many of the 4 are we going to win?
3. 3.
Andy?
I think, yep.
Sorry.
No, go.
I think 3 as well. Yeah. I think the Broncos, even at home on a 4-day rest, might be troublesome if we can't get some weapons back.
Yes, I'll take 3 as well. And that will take us to the 11-6 I predicted in the preseason. And just for the record, Andy and Jack both thought the team would win 12 games this year. So we're aroundabouts. It's been a very good first year for Harbaugh. Maybe this one I'll just throw to you, Jack. What is one move the Chargers can make right now to improve their team?
Put Solya in at right guard for Trey Pipkins.
Would you believe it? Kev Diego says, a few of my ideas, and one of them is move Solya to right guard, a man after Kev's own heart. I think this is a good question. Guys, who do you most and least want to see in the playoffs? Just one team each. And to remind you, the 7 teams currently making the playoffs: Chiefs, Bills, Steelers, Texans, Ravens, us, Broncos, and roster, like on the bubble, are the Colts and the Dolphins and the Bengals. But let's keep to those 6. Most and least, Jack.
Baltimore at home, I'd hate to see them.
Mm-hmm. Least? Sorry, most that you'd want to see because you're confident?
Texans. Okay. And that's who we're kind of being put up against. So yeah, Texans, love to see that.
Yeah, I would probably prefer of the division winners who, as a wild card, we'd play Texans. And if it was to finish this way, I would really not like to go to Pittsburgh and play the Steelers.
Nice. Where am I going to stand on it? I'll go with, I think Ravens is the one I would not want to face. And like you guys, the Texans this year, they're very beatable. All right, a few more. Eric, EV37, great follower, great friend of the show. He says, very kindly, congrats on 100 episodes, guys. It's truly a great accomplishment. Each episode gets better and it actually improves and has become an important piece of my fandom of the team. I always look forward to the next episode. Here's to 100 more. Cheers, mates. Thanks, Eric. Very awesome. Kind words.
Yeah, thanks, Eric. That's great.
Thanks, man. Appreciate you always getting involved in the comments and listening, man.
Fantastic.
And he does have a question. It's not all back padding. Do you feel, Jack, you can take this one. Do you feel that the hiring of Jim Harbaugh has or can be a franchise-altering decision that finally gives the team a permanent identity like the Ravens or Steelers? And can it change the way the ownership operates going forward to realize you need to spend money on quality experience, coaches, and staff to be successful?
Oh, absolutely. The identity of Harbaugh remains to be seen whether it lasts more than a couple of years. Yeah, these guys can sometimes burn very bright and we could win a Super Bowl. Amazing, fantastic, that'd be awesome. But I'm looking, for longevity. So, and the Spanoses or the Spani have shown that they're willing to drop money. They've spent a lot of money on a facility. They're spending a lot of money on Jim Harbaugh. I think the ownership has changed and it's changed course. So yes, I do believe so.
Je concur, to take Jack's French analogy. All right, three more, including two video questions. Our last written question comes from the Adelaidean. Do you say Adelaidean, Jack?
Adelaidean.
Adelaide. Ashholic, E-Wing fighter pilot. Two-parter, and I'm a bit worried none of us is going to have a good answer to the first with such young kids. Plans for the holidays? And the other is, what will expectations be for next season as a Chargers fan? Jack, you start us off, mate.
Plans for the holidays, family, food, good wine, good beer, do a bit of work on the house, and just be a dad.
Now my answer sounds boring because it's, family, food, football. First Christmas with my little man. Excited to just stay local and soak up. This is the first time I've actually put the Christmas tree up this week, and it was the first time I actually enjoyed doing it with the little guy pulling the balls off faster than we could put them on. So, it's exciting times to relive your childhood, I guess, vicariously through your kid. So,
absolutely.
Good answer, Jack. I'm all on board.
And we'll make it three. We've obviously got a one-month-old, so it'll be the first Christmas for her with a lot of exciting, adoring grandparents and a lot of food. Can't wait. Expectations, boys, for next season. I'll start us off. My expectation for this year is make the playoffs. My expectation for next year, I'm not going to set it too high. It's at least make divisional round. I'm not going to say win divisional round. I'd love it, but at least make divisional round. What say you, Jack?
My expectation is not about wins and losses.
Oh, here we go.
It could equate to wins and losses, but this offense needs to be top 10. This offense
needs to be top 10 offense.
And whatever happens on the defense, I don't think they're going to drop further. They're going to drop very far, but this needs to be a top 10 offense. And that's my yardstick. Roman, as I said last week, you're on notice.
Yeah. Find a way to keep Jesse Minter in the building and find a way to be professional about your relationship with Greg Roman, and if it's not going to work, can you sever that friendship professionally? Because, ooh, Jack, you're spot on. 20th scoring offense with Justin Herbert ain't going to cut it, and that's going to be troublesome heading into the postseason and winning at least one game. Onwards and upwards, give Hortiz another season. Continuous improvement.
Good answers coming at them from different directions. Hope you're happy with that one, Ash. Thanks for the question.
Thank you, E-Wing Fatapale.
All right, two video questions from friends of the show. For the first, we're traveling somewhere near London, England.
Good morning, boys, from not so sunny London. Congratulations on your 100th episode. You guys do an awesome job contextualizing the craziness of the NFL every single week. And us fans really appreciate it. All right, question time for you. who, for each of you, who is your biggest miss in terms of a coaching hire, a draft player, a free agent addition, and who is, would you consider your biggest success? So more looking for sleepers. I'm not looking for, well, Joe Alt looks good. Yeah. All right, boys. Congratulations again, and look forward to listening to it.
Oh, but he does look good, Joe Alt, doesn't he? I think we lost the start of that clip, but Ryan said he was coming to us from dreary London, which I think is what they call a tautology. But thank you for the question, my friend. I'll start us off, all right. Biggest misses, the friggin' elephant of the room. It's obviously Brandon Staley. It just has to be Brandon Staley. I was, you know, I bought what he was selling. I thought he had the intellect, the willingness to improve over the off season and self-develop, and it didn't quite work out. Will I ever cop a true loss on anything? Will I always try and pretend if he had a better GM, it might have worked out differently? You know it. But unequivocally, it's a miss. Another miss for me, JC Jackson. Has to be. I mean, I thought, wow, Derwin's vouching for this guy. He's at the time, it looked like he was taking a bit of a pay cut, like he was accepting below market to come to the Chargers. So their two misses. Hits, I'm going to say Cam Hart and Taheeb Steele. I thought those were very good uses of fifth round draft picks. I liked how each of them almost complemented each other. You had the raw athlete long, and then you had the slot corner with demonstrated ball production, and they're playing so well. Asante Samuel's not even allowed near the facility. That's how good they've been. So I'll count those as hits, although, of course, it's early and the draft has made fools of us all in the past. Jack, what about you, mate? Hits and misses?
Well, I have gone a little bit nostalgic, actually, because I sort of he left it quite open to coaching hires and things like that. So I'm going back to when we very first started Sanjay watching Lyle. The Chargers. No, actually, as much as I love the Lyle monster, I'm going back to pick 61 of the 2005 draft. And Alistair, I remember watching the Chargers with Philip Rivers with this guy, and it's Vincent Jackson to find a guy in the second round who ends up with a career of about 9,000 yards and 57 touchdowns. I just remember him being that big jump ball guy and being going, VJ, Vincent Jackson. And that really kicked off my fandom. So
which part is the hit here? Played with him in Madden a bit?
No, that's the hit.
But what's your take that you hit on?
We drafted him.
Okay, all right. I thought he was saying what we hit on in terms of players.
No,
we liked
it was the I reckon it was the chart who the Chargers hit on.
Who the Chargers hit on?
Yeah, that's how I interpret it, and
Jack's
I think I'm right.
It's open to interpretation, Ryan.
No. Anyway, but R.I.P. to Vincent Jackson. Obviously, had CTE and a very sad death. I love the big boys, and I thought this signing had so much. This is more recent. Had so much promise. And that was Brian Bulaga, who we signed for 3 years at $30 million. And then I think he missed 6 games in 2020. Then he played 43 snaps in 2021 and then was released in 2022. And since then, since that day, we've been trying to find a right tackle. So thank God for Joe Alt. And that's where
he is. Is he?
He's not bad.
That was your miss, right? Not going to go quite as far back, but hits for me. Obviously, finding Keenan Allen in the third round. The 2013 draft is phenomenal. What a charger. Casey Hayward as well. Incredible free agent signing for mine as well. Led the league in interceptions. Both great. Some misses. Oh, Tom Telesco.
We don't miss him.
No, we definitely don't.
JC Jackson, the obvious one, Al, had that penciled down. Guys like DJ Fluker. Taking him in the first round, trading up for Kenneth Murray. That's the sort of thing that comes to my mind.
Melvin Gordon.
No, still had a decent crack at it in the running game for the Chargers over a couple of years. Made a Pro Bowl or two at least. So, yeah, there's some misses for me. Mike McCoy too.
Thanks, cool. Ryan. Hopefully we did you justice, buddy. Final question coming up from another friend and former guest of the show.
Thunder Down Under podcast. Alistair, Andy, Jack. Man, it's been a pleasure to see you guys grow. Congratulations on 100 episodes. Here's my question. What is your favorite Australian snack or candy? And what is your favorite American snack or candy? Congratulations on the success, and I hope to see you guys achieve so much more. Go Bolts.
I love Dave. Thanks, Dave.
Of course. He's awesome. Super great guy. Dave, so happy. Love him.
I'll take this one.
Of course, Dave D. You go, man.
Yeah, Dave D from Locked On Chargers. Him and Dan do a great job there. Love having them on the show in the off season. It's always always a great bit of banter. For me, Aussie snack / candy, I'm going with the vanilla slice, or the snot block.
Good answer.
As Aussies would know, it's just my go-to at the bakery when I feel like treating myself. As far as US snacks, I'd love to say for Dave's sake, it's a big pretzel smothered in mustard, but I don't know how much of a fan Dave is of the old mustard. I'm going to go, and these are not together, but just two things that come out of the Grand US of A that I am a big fan of. Reese's Peanut Butter Cups.
Nice.
Chocolate and peanut butter. What a win. And I love me a root beer. So
there
you go.
Okay. Root beer.
Oh, yeah.
I'll go. So my favorite Australian snack.
I love a root
snack
and a beer. Does that count?
Which have you had more recently?
I don't get much of listeners out there, have a kid, you'll find
you've
out.
Been off one for 6 months, right? And the listeners don't know which yet.
I found the Australian snack a bit weird, so I eat these a lot. I love wasabi peas. So is that Australian? That's not really quintessentially Australian, but well, that's what I eat
Japanese,
a lot of.
So
yeah, I know.
You always
the
make
other
your own
one,
rules up though. That's the great thing about
it. I just tried to think about what was I having as a snack. Snack's something you have often, and I love wasabi peas. They got protein in them, which is good. The other one that I had just the other day, and this is, we had some friends over, or actually not friends, they were my partner's cousin and her partner. They bought me a bag of Flamin' Hot Cheetos that I've never had before, and I ate them, and the burn is there, but you can't stop eating them, and they're crunchy. So I'm going to say Flamin' Hot Cheetos. I'm going to try and find them and get a couple of packets and have them at home. So Flamin' Hot Cheetos for my
How are you nice. The next couple of days?
Fine, actually. No discharge.
Not the word.
Sorry.
Wild. Whenever we tick past an hour, just the wheels totally fall off. All right, to end quickly, favorite Aussie snack? I like where you're going with it, Andy. I never really ate a lot of these growing up because I've, you know, more Italian background. It wasn't really on the list, but my wife's nan, Lorraine, makes an awesome sponge cake. And I feel like that quintessential Aussie dessert, just sponge with some jam and cream filling. Everyone says that their nan makes the best sponge, or your mum, Andy, bless her soul, making the best sponge. So it's a special thing to eat for Aussies, especially around this time of year, because of course we have nice warm Christmases. So that's my favorite Aussie snack. The US one, I'm going to shout out my man, Carl D. I'd never heard of nor tried s'mores before I went to the US on my honeymoon. You guys know what s'mores are? It's yep. Of course, they wheel out one serve of s'mores, and easily in Australia that would serve 8 to 10 people. And I was sitting there with Kyle, Zeno, and Kurt just going, man, if I don't want to make it to 50, I'm just going to eat this every day. Absolutely delicious. So, geez, the US does food and snacks really well. Thanks for the question, Dave, and thanks to everyone who submitted one in short time. We've got the best listeners, and that is the end of another segment of the hashtag TDU mailbag. Back to you, Andy.
No worries. Well, we've just cracked the hour, so... But hey, it's episode 100.
Let's do it.
So let's have a little bit of fun. We usually do the NFL headline to finish up the show, but we're going to revisit something that's a fair bit of fun for us that we do in the preseason. We like to speculate on, you know, AFC title game, NFC title game, Super Bowl, the personal awards as well, your MVPs, all that sort of stuff. We always have a prediction and we like to keep note. We like to check in on ourselves. And now that the regular season is just a month away from its completion, let's end the show by revisiting TDU's preseason awards. And we'll take a look. So we'll start off with the NFC Championship prediction. Jack, as his wont, doesn't answer the question normally. So he just gave us a Super Bowl prediction. So I'll leave Jack's until the end, and Al and I can just sort of have the AFC and NFC Championship prediction. So Al's gone the Lions and the Packers. I've said the Lions and the Eagles. And look, I've got to say, it's a pretty close race at the top of the NFC. Lions are at 12-1. Eagles, Vikes, both are at 11-2. Packers hot on the heels, 9-4. And then you've got Washington, Seattle, and Tampa, and it just, you know, trickles down there. So look, Lions is a common thread. Philly may hold the title, though, for the best team in the NFC. How do we want to... Do we want to change anything? Anything can happen in the playoffs, man.
I think I'd stick with it. I think the Packers are probably slowly behind the others, right? Like that you mentioned, the Vikes and the Eagles, but it's close enough that you've got to stick true because you don't want to change now and then they end up making it. So I'll stick with that original bet. It's looking all right. What about you?
I feel pretty good. I think I've got the two best teams in the NFC with the Lions and the Eagles. So,
oh, we're stubborn fuckers. We always have been.
Hold on. The question for you is, man, have the Packers... sans Aaron Rodgers, have they gotten over the playoff kind of hiccup in his later years as a Packer? They couldn't get there, but maybe with Jordan Love and LaFleur doing some fun things, anything can happen in the postseason. All right, over to the AFC. Al, you've gone the Texans versus the Chiefs in the AFC title game. I've gone the Bills versus Texans. Now, clearly... we jumped the gun a little bit on the Texans. The Chiefs and the Bills, only two teams to have clinched a playoff berth with records of 12-1 and 10-3, respectively. Texans still leading the AFC South, but it has been a leaner campaign than I think we imagine it may be. Injury predominantly to Nico Collins in that wide receiver room. A little bit of a sophomore setback for CJ Stroud. Mm. He's had a couple of games where he just hasn't looked like that 400-yard kind of cannon guy. But look, like we said, anything can happen, right? You know, Jack's, I'll just jump in. Jack's predicted it's a Lions versus Bengals Super Bowl. So, may have missed out a little bit, on those ones, but at 5-8, it's a pretty steep road for the Bengals to make it even into the postseason.
They played well today, though.
They did.
Joe Burrow's on a heater.
Hey, look, you know, it's. I want to talk about Joe Burrow a little bit more deeper. Steelers 10-3, Ravens 8-5. Where do we see this AFC title match heading?
I think I would change mine at this point, mate. I think the Texans, I will move off them. So they've kind of worked. Defenses have worked just out a bit. Bobby Slowick, CJ Stroud is not playing at the same level, like you said. And I just don't think they're going to reclaim that this year, not least with the injury to Stephon Diggs. I think they're just going to fade away. So I'll change mine to the Chiefs. And even though, am I going to regret this? I'll say it's the Bills who make the AFC title game. And maybe it'll be in that game that Sean McDermott does something stupid and they lose again.
Yeah, I'm moving off the Texans as well. I just feel like they've been treading water a little bit against lesser opposition. Still, obviously, with a good record, but when you've got the Titans and the Jags having the seasons that they have had in that division, there's four easy wins, right? Look, I think it's going to be a repeat of that 2022 Bills versus Chiefs title game. I still think the Ravens are probably a better outfit than the Chiefs, but... oh, look, man, there's some voodoo stuff going on out of KC. And I just think that even though he's playing with would-be receivers and a real stitch-up kind of offense, Mahomes will find a way just to creep through. He does his best work in January and February. So, I think it's going to be Bills and Chiefs heading into the AFC title game. Now, for the Super Bowl prediction, Jack actually answered this one. He's gone, as I said, Lions... defeat the Bengals. So the Lions win their first Super Bowl. Al has the Chiefs going the three-peat over the Lions. And I have the Lions defeating the Bills. So once again, the Lions winning their first title. Now, how do we feel about this?
I'm changing. Well, I have to change the Bengals, so I'm going to go changing it to the Ravens because I think the Ravens are built to win with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, and I don't think we've seen playoff Lamar yet. I think he's got another couple of levels to go. So I'm going to go. It's be a hell of a game if it's the Lions and the Ravens. I still reckon I'd take the Lions.
I will. I think I'm going to stick with it, man. I'd love to see Detroit beat the Chiefs. They've definitely got it in them, but you got to stick with the Kings. They just keep on doing it in the final 4 minutes of the game. So Chiefs to go and win the three-peat. They're every bit as good as other teams who've won two in a row. They're going to make it three in a row.
Yeah, nice. I'm really torn. I think that Philly may just upset Detroit in the NFC championship game, but... Nah, I'm going to take the Bills. I'm going to take the Bills knocking off either Philly or Detroit, whoever get through. Man, Josh Allen's just playing out of this world.
Ooh, isn't he?
Crazy, crazy football. And that brings us appropriately over to the first of the individual awards, the NFL MVP. So Jack and Al both went CJ Stroud.
We went early.
I picked Josh Allen. And look, despite the 44-42 loss to the Rams on the weekend, man, he's just pushing himself further and further away from the pack. 342 yards, three touchdown passes, 82 yards rushing, and three rushing touchdowns himself, coupled with the rushing, passing, receiving touchdowns the week before. He's just, you know, he's heating up at a real good moment. Saquon Barkley, relatively close second. He's having a heck of a career with the Eagles. And then you've got, you know, any one of Goff, Jackson, Mahomes somewhere in there. Sam Darnold, a bit of a smoky. Jalen Hurts. How are we feeling? You guys changing yours?
I will change mine to Saquon Barkley.
Okay.
I will change mine to Saquon Barkley.
I'm going to join you, mate. I'm going to go over to Josh Allen. Quarterback.
Mm. Yeah.
But Saquon would be deserving, Jack. He's been awesome.
Yeah. All right. Quickly through the offensive and defensive player of the years before we get the rookies. Jack, Bijan Robinson quoted as close to over 2,000 scrimmage yards so far, just for your record, which I'm sure you have
look noted, at the pride.
Written it down somewhere. He's 1,378 yards. That's 977 rushing, 401 receiving. Al's gone Nico Collins. Obviously, sadly, injury derailed his season. However, heck of a return from the eight games he's played. He's tallied 832 yards at over 100 per game. Does suggest the storyline could have been different, both for his chances of Offensive Player of the Year and Houston's consistency throughout the season, although they've still got a pretty healthy winning record. And I went CD Lamb. 13 games, 973 yards, 5 TDs. Injury was, again, a mediocre play by Dak Prescott.
You know,
just one game over 100 receiving yards. I think he's missed the boat. It goes without saying it's probably Saquon's award if he doesn't get the MVP. Derrick Henry, the two of them are head and shoulders above the rest. Look, 700-yard games in his last eight, including 124 in the Eagles' win over the Panthers. I think Barkley's just got the nod against Derrick Henry. Of the receivers, Chase and Jefferson are the two 1,000-yard receivers so far. Chase, 15 touchdowns to JJ, 7. All right, Defensive Player of the Year. Both Jack and I went Micah Parsons. Jack says 12-plus sacks, 5-plus forced fumbles. He's a man who has, and I'm talking Jack, he's a man who likes to back up what he has to say. Al's gone agent Aiden Hutchinson. I think we're all missing these. Parsons missed weeks 5 through 9.
Too many.
Hutchinson sadly broke his leg back in October. And look, with Dexter Lawrence on IR, it looks like TJ Watt's going to run away with this award for the second time. And first since 2021, pending a pretty insane run by Myles Garrett to finish the year. What are your thoughts, guys?
I reckon. What I can't get over is my tips for offensive and defensive player of the year are still first. The first ranked, graded, highest graded PFF player at their positions. Aiden Hutchinson's a 94.9 grade. He had still, just on pure grade. So I've got the Midas, the reverse Midas, Jack.
Yeah, I'll go here. Who am I picking? I mean, Micah Parsons is still very high per PFF in terms of pass rushing and true pass set win rate. So I'll maybe move away from him and go. I'll go Myles Garrett because Myles Garrett's just a freak. And I think he deserves it over TJ Watt.
He won it last year. But yeah.
I still think Myles Garrett, he's just a game wrecker. He's just a freak. Physical freak.
Yeah, fair play. All right, Offensive Rookie of the Year. The three of us all went Caleb Williams, and it's fair to say that as pick number one, people probably did pick him. But look, it's Jaden Daniels, bit of a gap. Brock Bowers, maybe if the Raiders had shown up to more than two games of the year.
Brock Bowers has been so good, man.
So like, just good. Freak.
Like, freak. It basically, just call it a quarterback, or like a quarterback, rookie quarterback of the year. Because
sure.
Brock Bowers' impact has just been unbelievable.
Yep, yep. I think Jaden Daniels started well enough to coast through and win. All right, Defensive Rookie of the Year. Jack's gone Terrion Arnold. Al and myself both went Leitu Latu.
Nope.
Terrion Arnold tied in the league for passing for the most pass interference calls against up to week 13. And no player has surrendered more penalty yards, which is unfortunate because I really liked him coming out. But look, the word is keep doing what you're doing. Hopefully he can
tie that up. The flashes are there.
As for Latu, four sacks, ranks third amongst all rookies, showed better than expected against the run. But for me, and the way that the odds are looking, the front runner is Jared Verse at the minute.
Ooh, yeah.
Pick 19 overall for the Rams, 4.5 sacks heading into week 13. One of just three defensive players in the league with an above 80 PFF grade as a pass rusher and run defender. The other two being TJ Watt and Dexter Lawrence. So that's some company. Bit of a tougher outing against Buffalo on the weekend, registering a paltry 41.8 grade in run defense. Does have a missed tackle rate of 29.4%, but look, as far as defensive players go, he's been pretty impressive.
Him or Quinion, I think.
Yeah, Quinion's there as well, for sure. Jack, any thoughts on defensive rookie?
I'll change it to Jared Verse, sure.
The pragmatist. All right, as for comeback player of the year, now this is a funny one. Jack's gone Kirk. Al and I have gone A-Rod. I think it's fair to say that neither of the veteran QBs have had a particularly flashy return to playing time. Rogers' Jets are 3-10, eliminated from playoff contention. Cousins' Falcons sit 6-7 with a 17-15 TD to intercept ratio. 8 picks in the last month, 4 against the Chargers. Genuinely yet to be seen if either of these guys will be suiting up for their current teams in 2025. Now, I had a bit of a read about how this works. You know, you would have thought that DeMar Hamlin was winning it last year. Joe Flacco just goes on a hot streak and pinches it from the guy that actually died on the field.
What a travesty. So
I don't quite understand. I think maybe next year we'll can this one.
Poor Flacco having to accept the award and walk up there and...
Like hobble up there. He's like, I actually should be dead. Sam Darnold, is he in the running? Probably. Who would have thought that?
I like that better because all of these are dodgy ass awards. Like Joe Burrow played 10 games last year.
Yeah, that was my next point.
Like he tore his right wrist, but like, is that really comeback player from the year? And like Kyler Murray's another one. But these are guys who played. Yeah,
Herbert missed 5 games.
I like the Sam Darnold pick out of left field. That's nice.
Yeah.
Could have offered it to J.K. Dobbins as a possibility. Trip to IR probably restrict his chances.
Yeah.
That's a bit of a biased take. But there you go, guys. Just checking in. A couple were pretty spot on. A couple not. But hey, that's all the fun and games. At least I think all of our result predictions are trending, you know, pending a successful last month of the Chargers season. That's the important one. I think we're going to wrap it up there, guys. It's been a heck of 100 episodes. Thanks so much, everyone who's tuned in a little bit, a lot. Couldn't do it without all of your support and love doing it. We love the sound of our own voices, clearly. Here's to 100 more. Here's to a strong finish to the Chargers season. Get the W against the Buccaneers next week. Ride on strong. You take it easy. We'll see you next time on Thunder Down Under.
You guys.
his back, pedals looking, firing. He's got Floyd turning. Got it! Zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown!